Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Do you want to know how Duke Energy shut down that spill at the Dan River? The third largest spill in American history. It started on Super Bowl Sunday. It flooded that river with all that toxic sludge all day Super Bowl Sunday, all day Monday, all day Tuesday. They couldn't figure out how to stop the flow of these thousands of tons of toxic sludge into the river. They couldn't stop it. It was not that they couldn't clean up what they had already dumped into the river. They've barely even started that now. They couldn't stop the spill from continuing for days. They couldn't figure out how to stop it. Do you want to know how they actually finally stopped it? The spill was of a pipe that flowed under a big pit of coal ash. So here's the pipe, all the coal ash is on top of it, right? They couldn't get into the coal ash to go fix the pipe. Hey, you know, that's really toxic stuff. You don't want to be touching that. So they built themselves a platform over the coal ash pit. So they could sort of stage themselves on that platform and work from that platform to get at the pipe. You want to know how they finally stopped the pipe from leaking a week into the spill? The platform that they built collapsed. And hey, look, that's what did it. The spill finally subsided when some 27 million gallons of water drained from the lagoon and a platform constructed for emergency operations collapsed into the sludge pit and buried the broken pipe in tons of rubble. All that material went into the pipe. That platform collapsed into the pipe and plugged it. Ta-da! That was their fix. Total collapse.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, true currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Now, you would think from the intro to the show and the stuff we've talked about recently that, well, we know there's a lot of environmental stuff going on in the world, and I do talk about it from time to time, like every week. We're going to try not to do so much of that today, but even though I did play the Rachel Maddow thing, because it's just mind-boggling what's going on in North Carolina and in West Virginia and, you know, continuing in Michigan. I don't know if you saw this, Lisa Albrecht.
I did. Our guest from last week has new troubles. Or I should say reoccurring troubles.
Well, he doesn't think that it... He's
not concerned?
He should be concerned, and I'm sure he is. I think he's just at a point where he thinks that... it's going to work out for the best.
So to backtrack on that, so that was Chris Blomhoff from the Michigan, from MyCats.
Right, MyCats, and he has been involved in the protests against the Enbridge pipeline, which spilled a million gallons. He corrected me last week on the show. I had seen 800,000, and it's actually a million. And in the Kalamazoo River, and it's extended farther than the officials care to admit. It has not been cleaned up after, we're going on 4 years now. This summer will be four. So we're at 3.5 years since the spill. And then in January, on his birthday last year, Chris Womhoff decides he's going to crawl into the pipeline there near Kalamazoo as a kind of a protest.
For a little skate riding tour.
Yeah, you know, I heard that, and I'm not sure that it was big enough for him to do that. But some people said it was there was a skateboard ride in the pipe.
I meant to ask him last week.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. We just didn't have time. But he did go into the pipe. Came out after much hubbub and lots of police and that sort of thing. And then this January, the charges of resisting and obstructing a police officer and trespassing against Enbridge were dropped by a circuit court judge. Apparently just thought it was nonsense.
Someone with a sense of
propriety.
Yeah. Common sense.
Common sense. Well, there's, you know, in our judiciary these days, there's not a lick of common sense, especially in the Supreme Court, as we know. But the judge said, oh, get out of here. And now the Calhoun County prosecutor, David Gilbert, Calhoun County in Michigan, of course, has filed a motion for reconsideration of the ruling. That happens tomorrow. So I posted it on Facebook during the week, and Chris wrote on Facebook. He said, "Thanks, man." That's his wife. And by the way, he's running for senator in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, we should have talked about that last week.
Oh, I didn't know it at the time.
Oh,
I should. I mean, there's just, but he's running for the seat held now by Carl Levin, who I used to cover on the Detroit City Council many, many, many years ago, which so it all comes around at one point or another.
Well, I think the part that's maddening to me is like I put together, I don't know if you saw, I put a timeline. So I said, you know, everything that's happened in February, and it was, I don't know, 10 things.
Yeah.
Between train derailments and oil spills.
Oh,
and,
you mean environmentally.
And coal slurries.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Chemicals.
So anyway, Chris writes, he said, "Thank everyone. This is going to end up being okay. The judge has 900 cases a year and seemed frustrated this went this far when it was quashed. I can't imagine this will be different. The judge came to his conclusion on his own research." So it just makes me wonder who's leaning on whom to get this back into court. I mean,
don't need to wonder too hard, I think.
I don't think so. I think some, you know, who's got the power, and it's, of course, the
court. Who's got the money?
The money and the power, and, you know, and lean on the law enforcement, and let's bring the guy back in because he dared. Oh, my goodness, he crossed the fence. Oh, my goodness.
Well, and I don't, you know, we've got nuns in jail, and I mean, people are protesting because
nuns in jail. What is that about?
The extremity of these crimes these companies are doing and not getting. No one has gone to jail for any of these crimes, and yet the people who are peacefully protesting. What country do we live in? I've lost our border.
I had somebody make a comment on that thing I posted yesterday. The comment was,
oh yeah,
regarding what's going on in Michigan. What's the point of having the Olympics in other countries if you can't pick up a few tips from the host? But I'm wait. Yeah, I think then we play this. Oh, it didn't play. Oh, that's good. Something to look forward to. Hey, Danny.
Yeah, he said there's already issues.
There's a few glitches here this morning, so we'll just deal. Boy, as long as the commercials play, I don't need the only sound effects I got is this, so I can do that. Oh, it's just playing the that's play four, right? And oh, there we go. Thank you. See, and then a button gets missed.
Magical Denny.
Good. That's why he's here. He's our guy. All right. So now we started this with all this hubbub about spills and so forth, but that's not where we're going this week, okay? It turns out that this week is going to be a lot about gardening. It's going to be a lot about food, because in just several weeks, on the 15th, actually the 13th of March, the Good Food Festival returns to Chicago. I'm actually what they call an official media sponsor, whatever that means. But I'm happy to be involved in the Good Food Festival. And so for the next several weeks, including today, we're going to be talking to people associated with the Good Food Festival. And of course, it's put on by familyfarmed.org. And if you go there, it's a trade show and it's a food festival. There's food financing. There's policy involved. There's the Localicious Party, which is the Friday evening, the 14th, which is a big deal where you got chefs and restaurants displaying their wares with a little libation as well. It's just an amazing event, and it goes on for 3 days at the UIC. And we are going to be talking about it for the next 3 weeks on this program and get people excited about it because it is a big deal. It's the, I think it's the biggest thing of its kind. For instance, they've done, and it's 10th anniversary, by the way, too, of the Good Food Festival. And over the years, they've had more than 700 speakers. And they have a list, and I've got that on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you can see the list. I'm on there. I didn't realize this. I've spoken there 5 times over 10 years. So half of them, I've been involved in half of them. And of course this year. So, with that in mind, Stephen Jones, who's from the Bread Lab at Washington State University, and Gilbert Williams with Lonesome Stone Milling in Wisconsin are going to be on the show, around 10:30 or so. To talk about something they're going to do at the Good Food Festival, which is spotlight on ancient and heirloom grains. This is a new movement. It's all part of, you know, the local food movement and the idea that we can even eat healthier bread.
Very interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's kind of brand new. It just kind of came into focus last fall at a conference in New York State. So they will be here, Stephen Jones and Gilbert Williams. Just before them, and I'm going in reverse order now because I need to get to my guest, Carl Allgaier, who's being patient and sitting in the studio right now. Before Good Food, we will talk at the 10 o'clock hour with Dan Costa, my buddy from Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale, and Jeff Schultz from the Hidden Gardens in Willowbrook. We take a look at what's been going on with this weather and our plants. And that's something that Carl is probably interested in, too, which what's going to happen in the spring? What can we see? What do we expect to see after a very, very cold, snowy winter? Maybe some tips. And if you got questions, give us a call, 773-763-9278. We will be taking those calls at 10 o'clock, and we'll just kind of talk about what might happen when the weather gets warm. Will anything grow? Will anything still be alive? I think so. Rick DeMille weather at 9:45, and in just a couple of minutes, he's sitting in the studio with me right now, Carl Allgaier, who's with Smart Gardener. The Smart Gardener is a way for you to get your gardening done, well, I want to say in a smart fashion, but in an organized way. It's a Chicago-based startup, and it's something you can do online. You can go to smartgardener.com. I'll give you a hint there, and we'll get you started, and we will talk to him in just a second. And before the end of the show, folks, I want to make sure we got all kinds of stuff to plug. The plant is doing a fundraiser next week. The One Earth Film Festival is starting. I'm speaking this afternoon at the Southeast Environmental Task Force after the showing of the film Trashed, featuring Jeremy Irons. Lots going on. We're going to get to that whenever we can during the program. So I hope you stick around for that. Are you aware that up to 30% of granite slabs are disposed of because they are not large enough to create a countertop? That might seem arbitrary, and it does to me, but it's absolutely true. And it's a huge waste of material because most of that granite ends up in landfills, not to mention all the energy you expend transporting it around. Which is why Julie Rizzo began looking for a creative way to recycle what some people call scrap granite, but what she calls pavers, split stone tiles, mosaics, aggregates, and more. And voila, recycledgranite.com. Of course, there was that small challenge of creating the methods, machinery, and markets to make recycling scrap granite a reality, which resulted in her traveling across the globe, creating an entire industry. Easy breezy, huh? Through her company, Recycled Granite, she has established something called the Green Abilities Program. Individuals with disabilities go through a Recycled Granite Artisan Apprentice certification. The program teaches them how to specifically work with recycled granite waste. Want to know more? Go to recycledgranite.com or call 800-692-4642. 800-692-4642.
Have you noticed that there's something going on in the food industry? It's becoming much less industrial. People all over Chicagoland, the U.S., and the world are rediscovering fresh, natural food. Thursday, March 13th through the 15th, the Good Food Festival and Conference makes its return to Chicago at the UIC Forum. There will be urban farm tours, workshops with experts in a range of fields, and exhibitors from across the country sharing the latest in sustainable food systems, public policy, and of course, great food to enjoy. Just visit goodfoodfestivals.com to learn more. There you can purchase tickets, get directions, and check out the workshop schedule and the exhibitor list. Sustainable local food systems can transform our communities, our environment, and our economy. But it's up to us to get informed and get involved. It's the 10th annual Good Food Festival and Conference, March 13th through the 15th at the UIC Forum in Chicago. For more information, go to goodfoodfestivals.com.
Like I said, Good Food Festival. Now, when it comes to the seeds that Landreth Seed Co. features on its Facebook page, which is Landreth Seed Co., stands for company. Now, they're often vegetables, but Landreth knows that we love flowers, too. And the Saturday Blitz yesterday featured some of your favorite flowers that grow easily from seed, like Thunbergia, the Black-Eyed Susan Vine, or 4 o'clocks, also known as Marvel of Peru. I did not know that 4 o'clocks were known as Marvel of Peru. They're also known as False Jalap and Belle de Nuit, which are native. They are native to the tropical Americas and were introduced into Spain and then England from Peru in the 1500s. The name Marvel of Peru refers to the way in which people marvel when the plant bursts into bloom at exactly 4 o'clock. Pretty cool. Nigella, also known as Love in a Mist, Jack in the Green or Lady in the Bower, is an annual and a member of the ranunculus family. It is native to southern Europe and the northern regions of Africa. It has been known since biblical times when in Isaiah 28:27, it was called the bitter finch. Fitch, actually, not finch. That would be a bird. There are many more of these great annuals and seeds, and they're all at LandrethSeeds.com or their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407, 800-654-2407, Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
We've just had a couple of good questions from our guest. You want to ask those again, Carl Alguire?
Sure. I'm just wondering, how do the 4 o'clocks know what time and zone 4 o'clock is? Like, how do they know it's 4 o'clock?
You know, that's a really good point.
I'd like to know that.
I bet they could get faked out in Northwest Indiana.
Right.
Because
that's
they're
right.
on the same time
confused.
Zone. As, you know, I got in trouble last year because I had a garden talk in Indianapolis. And I do garden talks in Northwest Indiana all the time, and it's great because it's on the same time zone. I forgot that Indianapolis is in the Eastern time zone. I got myself into big trouble. So that's all I'm going to say about that. Welcome, Carl.
Well, thanks. Great to be here, and a big fan of the show. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Carl and I ran into each other at iLandscape the other week, which is a trade event featuring landscapers and other folks in the industry. It was on the day of a snowstorm, as I recall.
Yes. Yeah. We've only had snowstorms.
When hasn't it been? Right.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. And he said, you know, I sent you this information about Smart Gardener last year. And you did. And somewhere somehow it got lost in the shuffle. And so you said, you know, I'd like to talk about this again. And in the meantime, since you started, did you start it last year?
We started in January 2012.
Okay. So you're a couple of years old.
2 years old, yeah.
And you're doing great guns here.
It looks like it's been going very well. Thank you. Yes, we're excited.
You've won a couple of awards.
We have. We were picked as one of Chicago's top 10 startups from a couple of companies, Black Lion Review and Red Rocket, which was great. We're in a tech
startup. Okay, I got to ask, what are those? Red Rocket and Black Lion Review?
Those are both technology journals, sites, and publications. So they track technology in and around the Midwest.
Yeah. I got to tell you, the website looks great. It's very easy to maneuver through. So that's always a good sign.
Yes, thanks. Yeah, we've really felt that people needed some relevant information that was specific to where they live. And smartgardener.com allows you a platform to plan, plant, and manage your own organic food garden.
Okay. Said and done. Hey, let's go. But you say where you live, but you're based in Chicago. Does that mean just Chicago area?
No, we're actually live all over the United States and actually worldwide. We're in about 16 countries now.
No, really?
And yes, which is quite a phenomenon because we're really set up for United States gardening practice based on weather and zip code and plant selection types, things like that. But we make it infinitely variable so that you can input your own information. And we found that people in other countries have done exactly that. So we just got a review last week from Poland, our first one in Poland. So
here, here.
Yes,
woo!
People are gardening, food gardening in Poland. So it's great.
Of course they are.
Yes.
All right. Here's a ding for Poland.
Here's a ding for Poland.
Now, you keep saying we. Yeah, I assume you're not the only person involved in this.
No. Our group is a couple people in Chicago, and we have a couple people in Northern California. We do some programming in Tennessee and a little bit in India, so we're pretty geographically dispersed.
Yes, you are. How did this all come about?
Well, it all started with sort of a I guess the miracle of doing something that you love. My wife and I downsized our
house. Who's here in the studio,
yeah, she is.
By the
My
way.
My lovely wife is here, Sandra.
Very lovely wife.
And we downsized our house because we wanted to find a property where we could grow our own food. We've been avid gardeners for a long, long time. And we found such a property, and we built our dream garden. We built a little shed and a greenhouse and a chicken coop and got our garden all set up just the way we want it. And so many people stopped and asked us, how did you learn to do this? Can you teach me? We had landscapers stop and take pictures. And we just began to think about this as a business. Well, we really are passionate about it. We're
I mean, what was it that made landscapers stop and take pictures? Was it the organization of your garden or just the fecundity of it or what?
I think that there's just a massive movement of people really interested in trying to find ways that they can be a little more green, a little more local, a little more sustainable. And backyard food gardening is really the perfect on-ramp for that. And I think what we did is, you know, created a circumstance where we can get a lot of production, a lot of food out of a small space. And let's face it, who has time to sort of wade through tons and tons of gardening books and to learn the skill when you're spending your weekends at soccer practice and ballet lessons? And that's really why we created Smart Gardener.
And that's – okay, there's – it seems to me there's a couple of components, and I want to make sure I understand how it works. One of the components is using the website to help people organize their gardens that they will then execute themselves, right?
Yes.
And then the second component is, hey, you don't have time for that. We'll do it for you.
Exactly right.
So let's talk about the first part before we get, because I know there are folks out there who would love to have somebody come out and plant their garden. I had a woman, Lisa's got her hand up there. Okay, Lisa. You know, she's going to try to make me do it, but maybe we can get you guys involved. Several weeks ago, actually, maybe we'll go to the second part first. Several weeks ago, I was at a luncheon, and a woman found out that I do this show. And she said, I've got a question for you. Do you know of anybody in the business? And maybe I'll ask Dan Costa and Jeff Schultz when they come in. Because this is a question people ask me all the time. Do you know somebody who will come in and maintain my garden and who will do the weeding? And I said, no.
Really, I don't. Because people who are in the biz, they want to design it. They want to plant it. They want to buy the, you know, materials to put in there. They want to execute it for you, but they don't want to really come in and weed it for you, or just weed it after you've done it. It's you know, that's hard to find in the business. Now I could be wrong. Maybe
not
there's
anymore.
Not anymore.
It's not.
You guys would do that.
Absolutely. So we started really with the online platform where you can plant, manage your garden. But we found that for every person that was on that site, there were two or three others that said, I would really like to do this, but I don't have any time or skills. So we started the backyard service where essentially we drop organic gardens in your backyard and we run them like lawn care. So we come and plant, manage, and even harvest your fresh picked produce, leave it on your back porch with recipes and how to enjoy it. And we'll do as little or as much as you want. From just the initial build and fill, so we get you started with the heavy lifting. Or if you're busy and you need some help, we'll come every week and do it all for you. We do as little or as much as you like.
Yeah. And, of course, now the question everybody's asking, and it's going to cost me a fortune, isn't it?
Not at all. In fact, you know, we all have home services today. Maybe you have someone that cleans your house or mows your lawn or washes your windows. But this is a service like any of those, except we're the only service that will pay back a portion or even all of the cost of the service based on the healthy food it produces for you and your family.
You know, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're paying to have this done, but you get back
and then
more.
You get, right, and then you get your food.
You get food. Not only do you get food.
You get the finest, freshest food possible.
And you know where it's been grown. You know.
You get to watch it.
Well, you know the inputs. You know what, if there's been fertilizer used or. Now, you say you you do it organically.
We only do it organically. And we keep track of everything we do for you, and we communicate with you through your online garden journal, where we tell you, for example, we picked some fresh tomatoes for you today, we reseeded lettuce, we used this organic fertilizer, and here's a picture of a beautiful butterfly we saw in your garden today. All that comes back to you on email.
By the way, it's the last one in North America. I don't know. We took a picture of the butterfly. We haven't seen any. Sorry about that. But
an organic garden will draw those things to your yard.
Do you use compost strictly, or do you use organic fertilizers?
We use organic compost. We also use organic compost tea. And there, it depends
really?
On
okay.
each garden. So what we're building as a company is we're building a network of service providers all over Chicagoland so that wherever you live, you can get the kind of help that you need with an assurance of quality and health and expertise. We want you to feel like there's somebody who cares about your food as much as you do.
We're talking to Carl Alguire, who is with Smart Gardener. It's at smartgardener.com. Now, you can also go for this service that he's just been talking about, where they kind of come out and do it for you. Go to smartbackyard.com. Have I got that right?
Absolutely.
Do you have enough folks to do this? I mean, after you're on my show, you're going to be swamped. Bring it, baby.
Yeah. You know, this is really a great question because, you know, one of the big premises of our business is where are we going to get enough organic gardeners who could really help deliver this service? And what we found is
because you need to know people. The people have to know the techniques. Yeah.
We expect you to have a good level of experience, but we also have a very deep and detailed process that goes into pest and disease management, organic gardening principles, all those types of things. But we've been cranking these kids out of sustainable agriculture programs for 10, 15 years, and there's been a limited on-ramp to employment in these areas.
I would think.
So we really feel like we're creating substantive green jobs that really is the dream job of many. So the opportunity to build and manage and maintain organic vegetable gardens as a business, and it's a good business. You know, people really are interested in doing this. They want to teach their kids where food came from, how it grows. They want that assurance of knowing that everything has been taken care of the way they expect it to, because I think consumers have grown a little skeptical of that. And here's an opportunity to do maybe in your yard to go strictly from ornamental landscaping to having a portion become edible and maybe
you can help them start small, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
They say, well, I don't really know if I'm going to, I'd like to maintain it. I don't know if I really am up to this. And then, so you'll come out and do like an 8x4
sure.
area.
What
and
we do
and
as
say,
little
start
or as
there.
Much as you want. And we really believe that as soon as people get a sense of that this is a manageable service that they can afford and that really produces results, we think we get about twice as much food out of the average gardener as a homeowner would. But we can also help you expand your sustainable footprint. We can also do chickens, bees, fruit trees, berry bushes.
Me?
We'll do it all for you.
It sounds too good to be true. What, I would ask you what the drawback is, but you work for the company, so you're not going to tell me that at all.
Drawback is you end up not having enough yard for all the food that you really want to produce for your family.
Oh, that's so terrible. Oh, my heart's breaking for those people. All right, let's go to the other side. Now, that's the side, smart backyard side. All right. The smart gardener side is you don't have to bring us out, but we've got a great website here that will help you organize. How do you help people organize their gardens?
Well, we started with the website, and the website sort of allows you a mechanism to learn how to plan, plant, and manage a garden. So you just simply put in your zip code, the number of people in your family, and then you can create it's sort of a graphical CAD drawing. You just drag and drop a rectangular bed, a square bed, a circular bed.
Are you going to put designers out of business here, Pat?
Not at all. This is something that people love to play with, and it's very easy and intuitive. You can either replicate the garden that you have or create the garden of your dreams. And then if you put in a little bit of information, our algorithms will populate it with a planting plan that takes into account specific varieties of vegetables that do well in this area. It will orient them to the sun and height and spacing, and also builds in all of the popular gardening processes, things like companion planting, succession planting, vertical gardening, square foot gardening. All of that is built into the process, and it gives you a very clear process to walk you through weekly exactly what you need to do to manage and maintain this garden for maximum health and productivity.
Carol Brewer, Lisa Albrecht. I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with the scheme here. It sounds really good, doesn't it?
I'm loving it, and my mouth is just like on the floor. I'm wondering about your staff and all of that's how my brain is.
Well,
going.
That's a really good point because you're a staffer. That's what Carol does in her real life is work with staff.
We need more organic gardeners. We do. We have a big demand to put green gardeners to work.
You know what? We should see if because I have folks that ask me that question too. It's like, where can I get a job doing
smart
this?
Gardener.
Really?
Well,
absolutely.
You know, too, we've had a few folks come through from what's the kitchen? And they do the job training program for kids in trouble. Inspiration Kitchen, yeah.
And
you know, there's probably places for those kids.
Now, that's a really good question. Have you worked with any of these organizations or gotten advice from them?
Yes, we're working. We've talked to Growing Home. We've talked to a couple of community colleges. There's also a program called the Hero Program that's developing, which is a pathway to employment for returning vets where they learn gardening and then we would hope that we could employ them. So there is a big movement, you know, across getting a curriculum that gives a level of skill that would support our service.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really interested in finding a pathway to employment for green jobs.
You know, when Julie Rizzo from Recycled Granite, you heard her.
I love that.
Isn't that a great idea?
Yeah.
You know, and she was on the program, 4 years ago? She was just getting started, and she said, if you got the cash, you should get involved in this. And I'm kicking myself now. And now I'm thinking, maybe smart gardener.
Well,
if
you got the cash, you should get involved with it.
Maybe I should. You know, if you've got the cash, maybe you should get involved with this show.
Amen.
I think we can help each other
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
So new developments, what's big for 2014?
Well, one of the things that we've done now that we've been in the market a couple of years, one of the things that we have the only site that really aggregates plant-specific varieties. In other words, most garden planners or other sort of gardening tools that are out there sort of talk about a tomato or a pepper as a generic product. We have hundreds of varieties of tomatoes and peppers, 5,000-plus varieties on our site. And we've begun to look at aggregating that information and looking what are the top varieties of vegetables that people plant in a specific geography like Chicago. So we have 5,000 active users in and around Chicago, and we look at what they plant. And that's been really valuable data. It helps our partners to know how to offer the correct plant selection to their clients. We also know that this helps seed and plant companies know better about what consumer trends are directing for the next season. And we're really excited about being able to proactively understand where people are going, because we can look forward in your garden once you're up on Smart Gardener. We can look forward through today, next week, next month, all season, and know what kinds of things are going to be coming and where specific varieties are attractive to the public.
I think that's a really good point, because you're right. Folks who are new to the gardening business look at all the varieties, you know, whether it's tomatoes or roses or now even coneflowers, and don't know where to start. So it's good to kind of push them in the right direction. So what do you do? Give them 20 varieties and say one of these would probably work in your garden? Or
well, if we're doing it automatically for you on the website, we make recommendations based on that data. We also give lists out. You know, we just publish information on our site that says, you know, one of the top planted varieties of a tomato is called the Black Crim. And that variety is not readily available at garden centers and nurseries around town, but it's something that consumers have really had success with. So it's growing in popularity. So people are buying seeds.
Let me stop you for a second. Okay, so you say you got them plant, and they're going to get the Black Crim, which means they get the seed. But you're an outdoor garden thing, and to get it done in time, you really need to plant it indoors. Do you give?
Oh no, our platform will take you from seeding it all the way to harvesting it. So
even show you what to do indoors and when?
Absolutely.
No, that's great stuff.
It's all calendar driven based on the growing conditions in your geography.
Oh, that's fabulous. Carl Alguire, you and I need to have a little lunch. Okay, we need to do lunch.
I'm playing with the website, so I registered and I logged on, and I'm in the plant selection. So I'm building my garden.
Yeah, you got to watch out. If you say you have something, I'm talking to you, Lisa's looking at it, okay?
I'm playing with it. So I picked my asparagus, and I noticed that there were several varieties of asparagus that are not available, but I found one that was, and I put it in my garden.
Correct.
Is that right?
And Did you just plant something in your garden? Virtually?
Well, my virtual garden.
Oh, my God.
Asparagus. But the problem here, our computers are really slow. It might load by the time it shows
over. That's why you saw me dragging this cord here to plug in. So, they're really slow here today. Technology is against us here, but that's why people garden. Because you can defeat technology by gardening.
Well, this is a busy time for us because people have been trapped under 70-plus inches of snow all winter. And so they're on there virtually gardening, getting ready to get outside as soon as the weather turns.
You know, that's something you folks might want to do. You can go to smartgardener.com, like Lisa.
It's fun. So it starts off with a category. So it has broccoli, bok choy, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, tomatoes, an endless list of things, some of which I've never heard of before. And then you double click on that, and then it brings up a type of that. So carrots, for example, and then it brings up types, and then beyond that, you select your type, and then beyond that, it brings up varieties. But each time it comes up, there's definitions to explain what each of these categories and varieties are, or types and then varieties are, and then you can select, and then you put it in your garden. And then a video popped up, but that was really causing trouble with the WCPT.
And we
have a good internet connection. It works really well.
don't try it in the studios here. Kids, you might want to try this at home, though. And, of course, the Seed Keeper ladies tweeted that they love Black Crim.
Nice.
You know, I guess there are other fans out there, and they seem quite excited by it. And so do I. I think this is a good thing. And continued success, Carl.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's a shame that, the better looking half is just sitting there.
The brain's behind the throne is always
and
nearby,
all that.
So.
And she's smiling. I will turn on your microphone if you don't watch out. but thank you for coming down to the studio. Again, it's called Smart Gardener. You can go to smartgardener.com, or you can go to smartbackyard.com, and you can get navigate back and forth.
Absolutely. They're all connected.
Of course they are. Much luck to you, because and I think you're not going to need it, because I think this is going to go very, very well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We play this.
In the Green Room.
You dig.
You dig. And we'll be back in just a sec.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Hi, Mike Novak here, and I am stoked because on Sunday, March 2nd, my show will be live at Colatex Bakery and Deli. So come on by and join our foodie radio party. Colatex is on Harlem, just north of Grand, and there's plenty of free parking behind the store. During this live remote broadcast, we'll learn about their natural food products such as artisan non-GMO breads, bulk flours and grains, organic produce, and deli foods that are prepared fresh daily and are out of this world. And don't forget, the Academy Awards are that night, so come to Colatex, say hello, and pick up some fantastic fare for your Oscar party. I think I'm nominated in a couple of categories. Colatex does food right. Come and see for yourself. You might even be on the radio. Get all the event details at chicagosprogressivetalk.com. That's Sunday, March 2nd, from 9 to 11 a.m. The Mike Novak Show will be live at Colatex Bakery and Deli. I will see you there.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Here's a question from the Care of Trees. Why hire a tree care company at all? While trees growing in the forest and other natural areas can basically take care of themselves, those growing in cities and suburbs need help staying healthy and beautiful. They contend with air pollution, road salt, confined roots, trunk damage, compacted or poor quality soils, improper pruning, and other stresses. We're really hard on our trees, you know that? Your trees and shrubs may benefit from pruning, mulching, irrigating, soil management, or other TLC to thrive. When you work with the Care of Trees, you benefit from having trained, educated, and certified professional caring for your trees. Their staff includes registered consulting arborists, certified arborists, and certified tree workers trained in the progressive technologies and techniques. And we love progressive technologies on this show. And ensuring safe work practices. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hey, yeah, I want to shoot, baby, shoot.
Ooh, how you doing, baby? No, not you. You, the bow-legged one. Yeah, what's your name? Damn, baby.
Yeah, we're shooting with Ricky D, Rick DeMaio.
Here I go again, girl. Yeah. What's
here we
my
go.
Weakness?
Okay, then, Lisa, you seem to be getting into it.
That's a great song.
Ricky D.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm. What do they call it? Juking, turking? What is that stuff they call?
Twerking.
Are you twerking, Rick?
Yeah, and you know what? Here's the reason why. Is last night I watched the movie Hairspray, the John Waters one, not the most recent one.
Okay.
And they were twerking in that movie.
Were they really?
Oh, yeah. If you look, this is a scene where Ricky Lake, and I forget who the male lead was in the movie, but they went to the black side of Baltimore. Because remember, the whole movie was really about, like, integration and downward segregation.
Yeah.
But they showed them. They showed them dancing and they were all twerking. It was pretty cool. It was like, okay, Molly, you're behind the times. And I felt good about that. Anyway, hey, how you guys doing? You enjoying a nice, cold Sunday morning where all of a sudden we're back to the wood on our back porch is creaking as we walk down it.
Yeah, it's only going to get worse too, isn't it?
Have you noticed that? You're like, oh no, it sounds that way again.
Yeah, but you know, for a couple of days there, and I got to thank you because you sent me some stuff in the mail that eased my mind a little bit about the flooding because right. and I want to thank the kind folks who listened to Mighty House, by the way, on WCPT on Saturdays, because some of them have actually called in to say to Ron Cowgill, aren't you going to help Mike with his basement? And he actually is. We're getting ready to do something, but it never really materialized in.
And it never really was going to. I think it was more of a, you know, you get the pebble rolling down the hill, and when, you know, the local media gets a hold of it, you know, it becomes a boulder, and then all of a sudden you wake up and it's this gigantic boulder that's supposed to crash through your front door, and by the end of the day it's like, well, there were a couple of puddles. And I thought, you know, some of the discussions from the National Weather Service, I think, did a really good job of explaining why this event was not going to be a major flood event. And I think part of the problem is the way that the information is also disseminated. As soon as you hear a flood advisory out, you think it's going to flood. And as soon as you think there's a flood warning out, you think it's going to flood. And all that really means is that conditions could become possible for the probability of flooding when you have an advisory. Now, when the watch is out, or I should say with the watch, when the advisory is out, conditions are becoming possible for flooding. But then you really got to read into where the flooding could be. And it's really not that big of a deal considering that we weren't going to get a lot of rain. And snow actually does a really good job of absorbing rain. Rain doesn't really melt snow. Snow absorbs the rain. The problem is when you have maybe 2 or 3 inches of that concrete type snow and just a little bit of rain on top of it, that's when you get the major flooding. But we had so much snow on the ground like that, literally the rain was absorbed by the snow and it didn't really have anywhere to go to run off. So it was one of these things where you just didn't have all the conditions there to create flooding. Now, you did have big puddles on streets and a lot of the potholes now have become frying pan holes filled up with water. But this really was never going to be a major flood event. Now, what it did turn out to be, obviously, was an incredibly dense fog setup. If you've ever seen fog form off the ground, which is what it did in this situation, this will happen maybe once every 5 years. We had literally extremely high dew point air, low to mid-50s, move across a snowpack. And if you want to see that experiment again, just open up your freezer on one of the most hottest, most humid days in the summertime, and you see all that steam come out. That's basically what occurred. And, of course, we had that 20-car pileup, just devastating chain of events on I-57. And then the backside of the storm was the wind. But what really wasn't talked about much here in Chicago was the fact that Illinois was the epicenter for 7 tornadoes. One of them was an EF2, and a couple of them moved far enough north where they actually were reported to move over snow-covered fields. So if anybody wants to go, hey, where did the tornado go? You go, see that big thing in the snow? That was a tornado. Now, granted, they were weak, but the EF2 tornado was on the ground for about 12 miles, and we really lucked out. That thing was just out of Champaign. So, again, we have thunder snow on Monday. We had thunder slush on Thursday morning. We had about 1 to 2 inches of sleet and slush on Thursday. And then, you know, 50, 60 mile an hour winds. Now we're back to, you know, polar vortex redo.
Yikes.
Which is really amazing. That's why I said before about how things had that creaky sound already.
And the other thing you wrote to me, which I think is kind of interesting, and that I posted on my website today, was you you said you thought that looking at the rest of this winter that we were going to get the bronze for snow, but that we're going to get the gold for cold weather.
Yeah, we'll get the gold for the number of days of zero, because the way this pattern is setting up, we can easily get maybe 3 days or 4 days this week where the temperature may actually get below the zero mark. Now, I have to qualify that. It's just because you're below zero doesn't mean you're super duper cold. Again, I'd rather have 40 days of minus one as opposed to 20 days of minus 15. And I think numbers sometimes in the field of meteorology get stretched. It's just like the silly thing we call meteorological winter. You know, we call it meteorological winter because climate experts say, well, we only look at December, January, February for data. Then don't call it meteorological winter. Call it climatological winter. So we got to get these people to stop calling it that. It's climatological winter. And you know what? To me, meteorological winter is what I refer to as weather. And to me, weather ends when it doesn't no longer require you to wear a freaking coat and it's 30 degrees out. So when people keep saying meteorological winter ends this Friday, I go, well, you stuff that back, you know where. I mean, this is going to be a very cold pattern, and I wouldn't be surprised if we have another couple of big snows. You know, basically coming down the pipe with the way this pattern is basically re-evolved into exactly how it looked in January, when we had a monthly temperature of 17.9 and a departure from normal of minus 8.9. And, or I should say, the month of January, where we had a temperature of 15.7 and a departure above or from normal of minus 8.1. February, we've had a temperature so far this month, an average of 17.9 and a departure from normal of minus 10, Mike. So think about that. Even though the average monthly temperature so far for this month has been slightly warmer than it was for January, which it should be, the departure from normal for the month of February has actually been 2 degrees colder than it was for January. So you're thinking, well, we can't follow up January with a colder month, and we're certainly doing it. Maybe not as much snow. There's still a week left, but it has really been one for the books. And a couple of the numbers here, which really just astound me. The other day, Marquette, Michigan, for the first time since December 1st, actually cracked the 32-degree mark. That was their longest stretch of below-freezing temperatures that they've ever had. And part of the reason is all of Lake Superior was frozen over. Green Bay just hit their 45th day of below-zero temperatures. That ties their record. And Duluth, Minnesota just hit number 60, which blew past their record of, I think the record was standing for about 20 years, and they probably have another 10 on the way. So this winter just keeps breaking records and raising the bar for snow and for cold. And the thing about it is, it's not over. It's really been quite remarkable.
And to have below, yeah, you're minimizing a little bit the idea that, you know, if we go below zero, you're saying it's not such a big deal. But Rick, March starts this week.
Yeah, I know that. And when you get below zero in March, it is big news without a doubt. And when you have highs of 15, when the normal high this Friday is 41, believe me, that's a big deal. But I guess what I'm saying is, if you go back and look at this winter, you go, oh, we were the coldest ever because we had 25 days of below zero weather. That's not a good benchmark. That's more like a climatological fun fact. So the bottom line, 22 days below zero, the record is 25. And these are numbers that have been thrown up by the Weather Service. But I agree with Tom Skilling, who is posting different numbers on his website, which is not below zero, but zero or below. Because if you really think about it, we don't say, well, what was the temperature today? Was it 90? Was it 91? Was it 100 or 101? To me, a 90-degree day is very similar to a zero-degree day. So don't say below zero. Or don't say above 90. Call it what it is. It's zero or below. If you do that, then we're up to about 26 or 27. So it really is amazing how you can have fun with some of these numbers. But I wanted to ask you a quick question, Mike.
All right.
Have you guys talked a little bit about how people could better handle and prepare their plants, their house plants, when you have such low relative humidity? We've been just cooking the heck out of the atmosphere and the inside of our homes with all this heat.
Well, you know, I think that's something we'll do in the second part of the show today, because I've got a couple of a great horticulturist, Dan Costa from Vern Goer's Greenhouse and Jeff Schultz from the Hidden Gardens. We'll ask them a little bit about that, how to keep your plants healthy when the humidity is so low, because it wreaks havoc on your indoor plants.
Yeah, and part of the reason is I'm thinking, well, do I put more water in it, or do I spray the plants with more water? So maybe that's something you can ask, maybe something your listeners could be, helpful for them. Because forecast briefly, because I know we need to get there. Beautiful day today. Lake Michigan has actually cleared out a lot of the ice because of all the wind that we've had. Temperatures pretty much low to mid-20s today. Normal high again for today is 38 degrees. Normal high by the end of the week is 41. And you can feel that February sun already begin to do a little bit of work on the afternoon feel-like temperature. So mid-20s today, 21 tomorrow. Then it looks like a pretty good shot of snow coming in here Monday night into Tuesday. We can probably see a couple of inches, and that'll put us into fourth place. We should get over the 68.3 mark we are right now. 1967 with 68.4 during that big snow. And then the real cold weather comes in. Wednesday, high near 11. Tuesday, high near 14. Friday, high near 15. Saturday, high near 18. And these are all temperatures that are about 20 degrees below normal. And I always say, once these cold patterns snap, usually has a big snow waiting around the bend. So we could talk more about that next week.
All right. We'll be looking forward to it. Thanks, Rick.
Talk to you later, Mike.
You bet. Bye-bye. In the second hour, like I said, your plants in the ground, in your home, what's going to happen after, you know, we get a few more days of sub-zero temperatures. I hope you stick around for that.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Where have you been? I've been waiting for you. Cause last night I had something so good. These days get so long and I got nothing to do.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. I'm glad you're here. And I'm just hanging around for another hour and talking, well, some food later on. And before we get to the food part, we will be talking plant part, but it's all related, as my guests in the room know. Dan Costa is here from Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. Dan, good to see you.
Good to see you.
And somebody I've not met
before, and that's Jeff Schultz from the Hidden Gardens in Willowbrook.
Correct. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to have you both. So it's kind of, I know it's a kind of a conspiracy here because when I went to your website, Jeff, I noticed that you deal in bonsai.
Yes.
And it's a way of pasta.
I was going to sneak that in somewhere.
You're always trying to sneak in the bonsai. Oh, you know what I didn't do, though, is I meant to post the picture, and I'll have to do that. On my computer. Maybe I'll send it to you.
Sure.
Lisa, I've got a picture that Dan took in his backyard of the bonsai in snow. And it looks
buried.
It looks like a little forest. It's like a miniature forest in his backyard. So when I get a chance,
okay,
I'm going to have to send that along to you so that we can at least get that on Facebook. Hang on just a second, gents. And I hope you got a chance to listen to Mr. DeMaio's forecast.
No? They didn't have it on in the other room.
Well, it's a radio station. Do you think we could turn on, like, the show in the other part of the... is it too much to ask? Don't get me started. Okay. Well, he's predicting cold. We'll get to that in a second. But I wanted to do a couple of things here that are going on. At least I want to plug your event because that's tomorrow. Right?
Yeah, it is tomorrow. I will be speaking along with my boss, Brandon Levitt, of Solar Service. And we are speaking at the Northwest Suburb OFA meeting out in the First United Methodist
Church.
Explain
OFA.
It was Organizing for Action, and now it's... it is.
Now you don't know.
No, I've forgotten.
See?
It is Organizing for Action. Before it was Organizing for. It was the whole, for the folks who organized to get Obama elected. What was that called before?
I don't know.
OFA.
You're asking me?
They kept the OFA part, but it had a different, I'm flustered. I was
Obama
typing.
For administrator?
No.
No?
So it's the Northwest Suburbs.
What was
yes,
that?
America.
Oh,
yes,
America?
Obama for America. It was Obama for America,
for America,
and now it's Organizing for Action.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, so they kept the acronym, but they slightly changed it.
I hate acronyms.
right, exactly. But we're going to be talking about climate and one of the best solutions that are available today for some of the climate issues that we are facing, that is solar energy. So we'll be connecting the dots, and Brandon will be talking about how you can do solar for your home or business.
And another thing that is and by the way, give it the address again.
The website. Or the actual address is 1903 Euclid Avenue in Arlington Heights.
Got to let people know where they're going. And I also wanted to let folks know about the One Earth Film Festival that is coming up in just a couple of weeks. And the reason I'm mentioning it now is because next week it's going to be a little crazy. We're going to be broadcasting live from Colatex Bakery and Deli. I'm very excited about being out of Colatex. Speaking of great grains and ancient grains and stuff that's good for you. We will be there next week. And I hope folks show up at Colatex. It's just north of Fullerton on Grand. Just north of Grand on Harlem. Hello. Just north of Fullerton.
See?
Fullerton becomes Grand at that point. It's just north of Grand. You get to Harlem. You make a right turn if you're going west on Grand, and bam, it's right there.
Very convenient parking lot in the back.
Yes.
So don't give up when you see a crowded Harlem street with no parking. There's a big parking lot in the back. It's on the east side of the street.
Yeah. In fact, we should actually give the address, which I have. If you go to MikeNovak.net. Right at the top, it's right there, the Colatex Bakery logo, it's at 2445 North Harlem Avenue in Chicago, and as Lisa said, parking is available in the back. We're on from 9 to 11, and I hope you join us there. But meanwhile, the third annual One Earth Film Festival is from March 7 to 9th, over two dozen venues. In Chicago, Oak Park, River Forest, Forest Park, Berwyn, and River Grove. I'm trying to log on, and I get nothing here. So As I said, the technology is against us today here in the building. As soon as that pops on, I have more. But it's expanding. It's its third annual. Most of the film events are free. And there's programming for viewers of all ages. And what you want to do is go to OneEarthFilmFest.org. OneEarthFilmFest.org. And you can get the complete lineup between March 7th and 9th. And if we get a chance next week, we'll continue to mention it because we think there's a lot of good stuff there. I would give you the list of films if it could actually pop up on my screen. Are you getting through on the internet at all here?
Very slowly. Yeah. And it'd be difficult to give the list of films because there's so many.
Yeah.
There are some great ones, though.
Yeah. Here we go. Well, by the time I click on it and actually get that to pop up, it'll have disappeared. Finally, the plant on the south side of Chicago is doing a fundraiser at the Revolution Brewery Tap Room. Seeds for Success is what it's called. It's this Thursday, February 27th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Brewery Tap Room. That's at 3340 North Kedzie. It'll feature craft beers on tap from Revolution Brewery, seasonal menu by Pilsen's own FIG Catering, locally sourced frozen yogurt from Yoberry, wine pouring from Rainier Wines, and of course it's to benefit the plant, which is that wonderful building collection of these self-sustaining businesses on the south side, which is just an awesome thing to behold, and you need to go down there. This year at the plant, volunteers donated over 3,000 hours to assist in sustainable farm research, educational programming, and material reuse. They started the first Back of the Yards Farmers Market to produce value-added foods from Plant Chicago Farms and other tenants of the plant. They're just going strong down there, and this Seeds for Success fundraiser will help them raise money. So just go to Plant Chicago is the best place to go, and you can find all the information, plantchicago.com. And I think we got it all covered, or most of it, anyway. So back to my guests here, and I appreciate you guys coming in. And I mentioned Rick DeMaio. And let me reintroduce my guests here, Dan Costa from Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale, Jeff Schultz, The Hidden Gardens in Willowbrook. Rick's forecast says that by the end of the week, our highs will be like in the teens. I mean, we're going into March, and nothing has changed.
Back to that again.
Back to that. And he thinks we're still going to get ourselves another big snow at some point. It's not, I mean, he didn't forecast it for this week. Mm-hmm. We get a little bit tomorrow night.
Good thing it wasn't today because Jeff does plowing for people, so he would have been out all night.
Well, you know, and that's part of the deal, too. I've talked to my friends in the business. They're all having record years, okay, in terms of plowing. But, Jeff, maybe you can address this, but they're all also saying we're tired, our stuff is breaking down, we're spending money on repairs, we're running out of salt, we got to ship in salt from, St. Louis or whatever because you can't get it because the state won't let you use the salt. Is any of this true, all of it?
It's all true. And the other problem is there's nowhere to put the snow that we've already gotten. When you have these properties, you know, every inch of space is taken up, and it hasn't really melted, even though we did get warm. Mm-hmm. You know, the piles go down, but they don't go in. So it's definitely been tiring this year. I call it blood money. You're always out in the middle of the night. It's hard. But
you guys haven't had any of this for the last few years.
Oh,
you haven't had that extra income. So be careful what you wish for, right?
Correct. It's no, the money's good. You know, that part of it's been good. There's a lot of, a lot of people are making some money at it, but the repairs have been costly.
And it's interesting that people in the business, your business, horticultural business, do this kind of, they do the snow plowing in the winter, snow removal, but so do people like Ron Cowgill. With DR Services, who's a contractor and does home repair and that sort of thing. Different people, you just sort of grab what's there.
Right.
and make money in the when you can't be doing other things.
Can't be doing what you really like.
Which is growing plants in this case. So Rick DeMaio says we're going to get some more cold weather, maybe get some more snow. What starts going through your head about what do you think is going to happen this spring with our plants?
Well, I think that once the snow is off, we're going to see a lot of different stuff happening this year than in a normal year, especially like on people's lawns where they haven't cut real short in the fall or haven't raked up leaves or that. There's going to be some mold, snow mold on the lawns.
Is that developing right now, or does that happen after the snow's gone?
Well, it starts under the snow, but then it'll show up. The fungus will be on top of the surface and as soon as the snow is off.
Uh-huh.
So that'll probably be the most noticeable thing that people will see first.
Yeah, I don't think as far as the shrubs and trees go, I don't think we're going to see a problem with it at all because of the amount of snow we had. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really well insulated. I think the frost line.
What about the exposed branches, though?
On deciduous plants, it shouldn't matter. You know, yeah. Since it loses their leaves, it shouldn't matter at all. Evergreens, I think, because it's been dry so long these last two summers and winters, that you're probably going to see a lot of wind burn on them. They're going to be brown. So we may lose some bigger evergreens. But as far as the cold, I have a friend of mine that does bonsai, and he's got his
trees. Not the guy sitting next to you here. No, okay.
But he's got his trees just sit on the ground in the little tiny pots. He's got leaves over them. He's got snow on top of that. And he's got a probe down there, and it's only been like 25 degrees down there, even when it was 15 below outside. So it's a really, you know, the snow is a really good insulator.
Yeah, so the ground itself is frozen, but not very hard.
No, I think it's only like 15, 18 inches of frost line.
Yeah. Now, when you say frost line, describe what that means.
Just basically frozen down that 15.
So the frost, it's not really frost, it's frozen.
It's frozen.
But it's, and that's what I've been reading from the National Weather Service reports that Rick DeMaio gives me. It's like 15, 18 inches.
Yeah.
But that's considerably more than we've had in any of the recent years, isn't it?
A couple of years ago, you know, we didn't have a lot of snow. We did have some cold spells. It was down a lot deeper.
Really?
That's why when you put in a water pipe, you know, you have to bury it at least 42 inches down because our area, it can freeze down that deep.
Mm-hmm.
So this year it's not so bad.
Yeah, one year I think it did go down about 40
inches.
Yeah,
I remember a few years ago it got really deep.
Wow. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it's hard to do any work out there when it's, you know,
yeah,
trying to bust through cement is basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the insects, you know, like emerald ash borer, it'll die at 30 below zero.
Right. I had, you probably know Frederick Miller, Dr. Frederick Miller from Joliet Junior College.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the show, I don't know, a month and a half ago to talk about it and when we were really getting the cold temperatures because you were seeing the headlines saying, oh, boy, this is really going to knock back emerald ash borer. And he said, no, not really. Because you'd have to have the 20 below for weeks to make it
right.
Effective.
And the tree, the bug's inside the bark of the tree, so, I mean, it has that protection, too, you know.
But Dan and I have talked about that before. You said, you know, the cold doesn't discriminate. If it kills and let's not use the pejorative bad and good bugs, mm-hmm. but if it kills insects that can do harm to your plants, it can also kill insects that benefit your plants.
Beneficials can get hit, too. Like anything that overwinters as eggs that are exposed. You know, like lace wings, they're out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that could definitely get some detrimental effects. One good thing, though, is we probably won't have a lot of mosquitoes in the spring.
Because they will
because
be knocked,
you think? Because the early ones are in the soil, overwinter in wet soil.
Oh.
And so they're probably frozen hard as a rock.
Yay!
That should knock that back a little bit.
Knock it back, but it's not going to get rid of them.
No, it's, you know, and that's the other thing. Dr. Miller, I said, if you had to sum it up, what would you say for the spring? He said, I think it'll be pretty normal.
I agree. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but here's something for people to think about, and that is salt. the salt that got piled on their parkways, on their lawns, because, you know, that they, and I'll tell you, I watch people and I listen to them talk about this. Most people have no idea the damage that salt does, and they're out to get the cheapest, quickest, you know, sodium chloride, rock salt, and they just, and then they do it like their fertilizer. They think if some is good, more is better. And so they're slathering it on their sidewalks and on their driveways. And I'm thinking, you're going to pay for this in the spring.
Yeah.
Your plants are going to pay for this. You talked earlier, Jeff, about some of the evergreens. I would think some of the evergreens would take a hit from this.
From the salt?
Yeah.
Boxwoods, yews, you know, any like broadleaf evergreens or regular evergreens, they're going to take a lot of damage. Things that are deciduous, not quite as bad. I mean, the salt's going to get into the soil, but it's more of the salt spray, I think, that does them in.
So, yeah, that makes total sense. So even if it's piled up and it's under a deciduous tree, and yes, there's going to be salt in that soil, you're thinking it won't be as damaging as the spray that hits the actual needles and leaves. Yeah. Of
boxwood. Yeah, it's there longer when it's on the plant, on the surface like that.
Yeah.
So it's there the whole time, sucking the water out of the tissues.
So maybe this rain we had this week is actually a good thing for some plants.
Wash some of it off, at least.
Yeah.
It'll
the other
help.
Thing with deciduous trees and that on the parkways, because all the salt from the streets during the winter, every time they, you know, they salted the road, it ends up on the parkway. And that might cause some root damage. But hopefully when we get the melt, we'll get enough water going through. It'll kind of alleviate that problem, wash it out.
Uh-huh. That's the other question people ask, though, is if I got salt in my soil, how do I get it out?
Water, leaching it through is the only thing that'll work. Yeah. There's really no chemicals treatment that you could put down that'll get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to hope that we get lots of rain in the spring and that and wash it out.
And I've known some lawn care people who say, I can tell you where your crabgrass is going to be. It's going to be where all that salt was.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, when you kill out the regular grass, that's the first place the crabgrass is going to come in.
Right.
You know, it likes that bare open spot.
And it's also apparently a little more tolerant
of the salt,
than your your Kentucky bluegrass.
Some things will handle the salt much better.
Yeah.
And that, too, is an annual grass, so it'll be sprouting from seed that's in the ground. So it's not a plant that has to overwinter as a plant where it would have been damaged.
So that's where, you know, you get that, as you said, Jeff, it's opportunistic. It has its spare area. It's not being outcompeted by the lawn that's there because you've killed it with the overuse of salt.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got crabgrass, and now you get to deal with that if you want.
Hoping that some of the things, though, like the impatiens, downy mildew, might get knocked back with all the cold.
You know, that's a really good point. Hold that thought. I want to get to the impatiens, downy mildew, and what advice people were being given last year and what you guys saw in the field and what you were likely to see this year. We're talking to Jeff Schultz from the Hidden Gardens in Willowbrook, Dan Costa from Vern Goer's Greenhouse, Hinsdale, my buddy who always calls in and corrects me, all those great things. That
are conscience.
The conscience of the Mike Novak Show. There he is. If you've got a quick question, 773-763-9278. We'll see if we can squeeze in one or two of those. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. After what has been a pretty nasty winter, the Care of Trees has a checklist that you might want to look over as we head into spring. Now, first, check your trees for damage that might have occurred over the winter. Spring is a good time to prune out any frost and freeze damage to your trees and other plants. In spring, you can prepare your yard for summer landscaping by thinning or removing deadwood and or removing the unwanted parts of your existing landscape. For more information on tree pruning, go to thecareoftrees.com to watch a brief informational video available on their services page. If you're not sure your tree has been damaged, well, it's a perfect reason to contact the certified arborist at the Care of Trees and get some expert advice. Better to be safe than lose a treasured tree. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466. 508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Hi, Mike Novak here. Did you know that on Sunday, March 2nd, my show will be live from Colatex Bakery and Deli? Now you do. Colatex is a food purveyor that does it right, and I want to help get the word out. So come on by and join our foodie radio party. Colatex is on Harlem, just north of Grand. There's plenty of free parking just behind the store and plenty of fresh food in the store. You can get all the event details at chicagosprogressivetalk.com.
Have you noticed that there's something going on in the food industry? It's becoming much less industrial. People all over Chicagoland, the U.S., and the world are rediscovering fresh, natural food. Thursday, March 13th through the 15th, the Good Food Festival and Conference makes its return to Chicago at the UIC Forum. There will be urban farm tours, workshops with experts in a range of fields, and exhibitors from across the country sharing the latest in sustainable food systems, public policy, and, of course, great food to enjoy. Just visit goodfoodfestivals.com to learn more. There you can purchase tickets, get directions, and check out the workshop schedule and the exhibitor list. Sustainable local food systems can transform our communities, our environment, and our economy. But it's up to us to get informed and get involved. It's the 10th annual Good Food Festival and Conference, March 13th through the 15th at the UIC Forum in Chicago. For more information, go to goodfoodfestivals.com.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, and I will remind you that, as I said, we'll be talking right after we finish our discussion about spring, which may arrive or not, who knows. We will be talking to a couple of folks who are going to be speaking at the Good Food Festival, which is coming up on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of March, and that is Stephen Jones from the Bread Lab at Washington State University, Gilbert Williams from Lonesome Stone Milling in Wisconsin. They'll be talking about ancient and heirloom grains in just a few minutes. But meanwhile, we're back with Dan Costa and Jeff Schultz. Jeff, give me a quick overview of your business. What is it? You're closed for the season, right?
Right now we're closed. We'll be opening back up, depending on the weather, somewhere between the middle of March and the first of April.
And it's interesting. You're going to have to look at the weather and see how long the cold persists. It's because some years, you know, at this time of year, we'd be in the 40s, 50s, and pansies are starting to come in and so forth. And right now, there's probably nothing going on, is
there? There's nothing going on. You know, we do a lot of trees and shrubs, so my growers can't even dig them right now. You know, the ground's frozen, so we have to wait to that. So, when it comes fast.
And you're at hiddengarden.net.
Correct.
I know because I'm a .net guy. Because I could, you know, with a name like Hidden Garden, I could tell you right away because there's dozens of Hidden Garden when you go looking on the internet. I'm betting you couldn't get .com. I couldn't even get .com from Mike Novak. Somebody already had. It's like, are you kidding me? How many Mike Novaks are there on the internet? But I always find it interesting the decisions that companies make, garden centers. Some stay open, some don't. You know, it all depends on your business model.
And it depends on what, you know, if I don't have a big store, you know, to bring in bird seed and all that, and a lot of people do, and that's what keeps them going through the winter.
Fern Gorse is open all winter because right now we're doing a lot of planting of stuff and getting ready for spring.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the people are there, we might as well be open.
Right.
Because the personnel are there working on stuff anyway.
Do you do your own growing there at Fern Gorse?
We grow a lot of the flats. The annuals are grown there. We do a lot of material by cuttings. We grow our own poinsettias. Right now I've been planting perennials, dormant perennial starts, getting that going for the spring. So, yeah, we do a lot of growing. We've got houses full of geraniums right now. It's always nice to be planting geraniums in December.
Yeah.
And it shocks people, but those are the big ones that you end up buying in the springtime. That's how they got big.
It's you planted them in December.
Mm-hmm.
Fern Gorse, if you want to go to that website, it's Fern Gorse, and that's spelled V-E-R-N-G-O-E-R-S, Greenhouse, ferngoersgreenhouse.com. Your address?
5620 South Oak Street in Hinsdale.
And your address?
16 West 658 South Frontage Road, and that's in Willowbrook.
All right. We got that done. Now, we're talking a little bit off air, Jeff. Dan says that you're a really good woody plant guy, and you know you seem to have good information about that. What? I was thinking about if it continues to be this cold. That's actually probably not a bad thing for deciduous trees because that means that they're going to come out of dormancy rather slowly.
Right. The worst thing that could happen is if we were to get a warm-up and things start to move, and then it gets cold again.
I mean, the worst thing is we get that warm-up, and then the polar vortex, you know, reestablishes and rears its ugly head. And then, like a couple of years ago, we lost a lot of the apple crop up in this area.
And in Michigan and that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if it warms up slowly, the snow melts slowly, we get some water down into the ground. That would be all a good thing. If it gets really warm and then really cold again, that's when a lot of plants are going to get hurt.
So, in a sense, even if we stay cold, you know, we're going into March, it's going to come in like a lion, like a frozen lion, okay?
Probably.
Yeah. Who knows how long that could go. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's bad for people's psyche, okay?
Correct.
It's hard for you to get your business rolling.
Oh, yeah. There's been some years, you know, by March 15th, we're up and rolling. And then there's other years, you know, it's April 10th, and we still don't have anything in yet, you know. So just kind of sit around, wait, and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, let's go to a question that Rick DeMaio posed, actually. I'm sorry you didn't hear him out there, but he was talking about the relative humidity indoors and what that does to plants and how you fight that.
It's just it's bad for the foliage of the plants indoors because it dries. The edges of the leaves can dry out easily because they're very thin. You have to water more often because the air is taking the water out of the soil in your house plants and moving it around.
But conversely, there's two things at work, though. Then they kind of fight each other, it seems to me. One is the metabolism of your plant slows down, and people say, conventional wisdom is don't water as much because the plant can't absorb the water and you're going to drown the plant with kindness because there's not enough sun. The temperatures might be cooler like they are in my house. So the metabolism of the plant slows down and you want to be careful that you don't overwater. But you're saying the water is getting sucked out by the dry atmosphere.
Yeah,
does that compensate? I mean, does it balance?
Well, as long as you're attentive to it, yes, it does.
And your soil drains well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
if your soil stays soggy, it's going to cause rip rot and that. But
yeah.
You always got to watch and make sure you feel the moisture in the soil before you add any water.
And it's something that, and I'm sure you've both said to people before, don't water on your schedule, water on the plant schedule.
Right. You don't want to say, I'm going to water everything on Sunday afternoon.
Even that's when you have the time.
Yeah,
or my irrigation system goes on every 3 days. Everything's fine. You know, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, unfortunately,
indoors
gardening, you have to go out and look.
Same thing.
You know, you have to go out and check, you know. I think probably the worst thing is irrigation systems on plants. They just drowned everything.
And a lot of people don't run them properly either. I get customers will come in, they're having trouble with their plants outside, and they say, well, it goes on for 10 minutes every morning.
I know that
does nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that's a waste of time. You want to water.
And a waste of water.
You want to give that 1 inch of water all at once during the course of 1 week. And that way you'll get it deep enough that it'll actually mean something to the plant.
So the roots can chase it down.
Yeah, and the only way to know is when you got an inch of water is to actually physically measure it one time, put something out there under your sprinkler system, time it how long it takes to fill up to 1 inch deep, and then set your system to go on for that amount of time each week.
You know, that's a good message, and I'm going to issue another message to all of you who have those watering systems, and they go on once a day at noon for 15 minutes. I'm going to come to your home, and I'm going to cut your little system into bits is what I'm going to do. I'm going to cut it all up, and I'm just going to leave it there, and I will even leave my name there and tell you that I did it. I don't care. You could come after me because I'm coming after you. It just drives me crazy because you know those people, and some of us live next to those people. We're not in the city. You know what? One of the things I love about living in Chicago, in the neighborhoods, they're not crazy about their lawns the way they are in the burbs, okay? Yeah. They just aren't.
Well, not by my house either.
It's good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, and I know where you live. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. A lot of places they aren't, but some places they are. But getting back to the plants indoors, so if you want more moisture on the leaves, I've been told that spritzing them really is kind of ineffective, that you're better to have the plant sitting on rocks in a container where the evaporation causes
a gravel tray is
a gravel
the
tray,
best
yeah.
thing. Because when you mist, that's more for the people's comfort that they thought they did something good for the plant.
Yeah.
Because within about 10 minutes, it all dries off the leaves. The natural air current of the room moves it into another part of the house, and it's gone as far as the plant's concerned. But when you have a tray underneath it, you fill it to the top with aquarium gravel and about halfway up with some water, but not touching the bottom of the pot. That evaporates slowly over time as a 24-hour humidification right around the plant. Using a humidifier in your house is good, too.
Great. Yeah. Is that for our gentleman here?
I'm not sure.
Oh. Are you talking to me on air? Talk to me on air here.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
We got a gentleman on the line. He's wanting to comment about the Burpee catalog that's listing a maize hybrid seed that's restricted use only.
Huh. Are you guys familiar with that? You know what? I tell you what, that sounds like a conversation we're going to have with the gentleman coming up. So have him hang on. If there any other thing that you guys, because we're out of time here, but as we go into the spring, that you would advise people to be aware of as their gardens come back to life?
Watch moisture levels. Because
even with all the moisture we've had this winter, huh?
Well, maybe very soggy, and so then you want to make sure it dries out before you do any work in the yard.
Right.
So your soil, you're not working in saturated soil, which is harmful.
Right, you're compacting the soil, and if you ever worked in soil that's really wet, when it does dry out, it dries out like a rock. It's like cement, you know, because you've compacted that soil so much. So.
That is one of the worst things you can do is get out there too early. And that, it seems to me, is a danger this year because it's been so cold and people are so stir crazy. They want to get out in their gardens and then they start to pack it all down. Here's a tip that I've used is, okay, if you can't help yourself, okay, if you can't help yourself, bring a board out there and stand on a board, all right, if you have to. Mm-hmm. Garden, at least it'll spread the weight a little bit, and you're not going to be putting mucky footprints in your garden.
It helps.
Yeah.
But also with digging, just digging in it, you can compact around the edges of the hole as you're digging.
Your best just to leave it alone until
just it's... Just wait.
Just wait, yeah. Be patient. Okay, those are words of wisdom from Jeff Schultz from the Hidden Gardens and Dan Costa from Vern Goers. Thanks, you guys, for coming in. I appreciate you taking the time to do that.
Well, thanks for having us, Mike.
Yes, thank you very much.
And we'll have to do it again. I got to get out your way and see your place.
You're welcome anytime.
So
I want to see his bonsais.
Yeah,
bonsai.
Bonsai.
There's some beautiful bonsai over there.
Don't dare say that in the room here.
We unless you're jumping out of an airplane. Said that we were saying it incorrectly, that it's bonsai.
Bonsai?
Well, that's what she said, but she
we've got a controversy here.
Yep.
A caller apparently said it was bonsai. Dan says bonsai. Okay.
Bonsai.
And it's poinsettia, by the way, not poinsettia.
As my Southern Illinois customers used to say.
That's right, poinsettia. All right, thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. It's always nice to know that people sometimes actually listen to my show and don't keep it on just so the cat won't be lonely. I found that out last week when I received an email from a listener who said he was going to get a CSA share from Purple Leaf Farms. Woohoo! I guess I should give him a ding there. That's the way that advertising thing is supposed to work, kids, especially since this great CSA is run by a friend of the show, Jessica Rinks. She grows vegetables, herbs, and cut flowers using organic methods, no synthetic chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, or synthetic fertilizers. Sign up now. And starting this summer, you'll receive 6 types of vegetables, 2 types of herbs, and 1 large mixed flower bouquet every week for 15 weeks. I had a Purple Leaf Farm CSA last year, and every week I had fresh flowers in my home. Do you have any idea how many brownie points I got for that? There are pickup locations in Elgin, Forest Park, Oak Park, Heinz VA Hospital, the UIC Chicago campus, and more on the way. Or, new for this year, explore their personal delivery options. For more information, go to purpleleaffarms.com or call 312-437-7542. 312-437-7542. Leave another email for me this week and tell me that you signed up for Purple Leaf Farms.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
We'll be getting to our next guest in just 60 seconds. I bet you thought March would never get here. Well, for some of us, it has already arrived. I'm talking about folks who have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The March-April issue showed up on my doorstep the other day, and it makes me feel at least 2.7 degrees warmer. One of the reasons is that this issue is always accompanied by the Yearly Resource Guide. That additional little magazine contains information about all kinds of Chicago gardening resources, garden centers, tools and equipment, supplies, seeds, classes, books and publications, arboretums, greenhouses and florists, aquatic and pond supplies, landscape design and installation services, and more, and it's all at your fingertips. In print! very old school. No messy search engines, no annoying pop-up ads, just the regular print ads, which you're looking for anyway. Of course, you also get the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, complete with my column on the inside back page. Well, there's a downside to pretty much everything. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine immediately. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I knew that I wouldn't.
You see, he feels good because he's had his grains, and he's in search of ancient and heirloom grains. So thank you, Mr. James Brown. On that note, let's go to the phones and bring in, first of all, Stephen Jones. Stephen, are you with me there?
I am.
Stephen is with the Bread Lab at Washington State University. He is joined on the other line by Gilbert Williams. Gilbert, Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
From Lonesome Stone Milling in Wisconsin. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the program this morning.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
What's weather like out in Washington State? That's what I want to know.
Well, I'm actually in Austin, Texas, right outside the airport right now. I'm based north of Seattle, and the daffodils are about to bloom in about 3 days.
We hate you.
I don't want to hear about it.
I know.
We hate. I saw a friend of mine who lives in Atlanta posted a photo yesterday of crocuses coming up. I hate him as well.
Good.
Now, I realize hate's a strong word. I'm just a little jealous.
I understand it, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Stephen, I had a vacation home out in Washington State for about 17 years. It was on the Olympic Peninsula.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. I love the Pacific Northwest. I wonder, what am I still doing in Chicago? I think that it's just a great place to live.
Well, my mother-in-law's there, so I love Chicago, too.
Ah, good. So you guys are in the vanguard of a new wave of food, which happens to be grains. This vanguard is going back to ancient grains. Why are we doing what happened in the meantime? I thought, Wonder Bread builds bodies, strong bodies 12 ways.
That was the problem.
Yeah. Well, and it's not so much the wheat, but what we've been doing with it and the flour. So we work with newer ones too. But in our laboratory, we work with 100% whole wheat grain, and we fresh mill it, and we make bread that has only 4 ingredients instead of 24. So we work with craft bakers on discovery of how to make something like 100% whole wheat taste good, and then also discovering how to make all the nutritional value of it available to folks. So it's sort of what we're doing. We work with the older grains, and we do work with some newer ones too. So
now that's out at Bread Lab in Washington State. Stephen, can you explain exactly what the Bread Lab is?
Yeah, and first I'll say where we are. So we're north of Seattle. So we're about an hour north of Seattle, about an hour south of Vancouver, British Columbia, in the Skagit Valley, which is an area of very diverse farms. We grow about 80 different crops there, including tulips and daffodils. And the farmers rotate with wheat, and it was always treated as sort of a commodity. So and worth nothing, basically, and soulless and faceless and tasteless. So we devised the Bread Lab about 4 years ago, and what we do is we turned a laboratory into a craft bakery. So I have a full-time baker, and we have scientific equipment, and we have baking equipment like a steam-injected hearth oven, and we just discover new uses and flavors. And something we noticed right away about 4 years ago is there can be a terroir and a flavor to our wheat, and we never really knew that prior to coming in. So we're working with flavors, we're working with chefs. We have Dan Barber's chefs from Blue Hill in New York came in. That's the James Beard most outstanding restaurant in the country this year. And he had chefs there last week making 100% whole wheat pastry. So we do the science and we do the art, too. We work directly with chefs and bakers.
You know, I'm sure there are people out there who think that if I'm going to eat whole wheat bread, it's a punishment of some kind.
Yeah, they do. And we flavor's important, so we work a lot on the texture and flavor, and we can make 100% whole wheat baguettes from local wheat, and they're just delicious. So it's we need to get over that kind of 60s or 70s bad whole wheat bread thing that we're all dealing with.
I think it goes back a little before that as well. But at some point, we used to bake a lot of our own bread in the country. We just don't do that anymore.
Exactly, and we hold workshops for folks, too, serious home bakers, and I agree completely. You know, if people can fresh mail or hook up with a local miller like our other speaker and get fresh grains, it'll open up a whole new world for them. I started baking with my Polish grandmother when I was 6 years old, and I haven't stopped. So.
See, if my Polish grandmother had actually spoken the language, it might have been a little easier.
Sure.
Did she teach you Polish?
No, she spoke English.
Oh, okay. You had an advantage there. Gilbert Williams, what's going on in Wisconsin? You work with others at the Lonesome Stone Milling. How does that operation work?
Well, actually, we started that about 5 years ago just as a seed cleaning operation, but then found we can take rye and soft red winter wheat, and that makes a very good pancake mix, so we started selling that at farmers markets. And then we got a 30-inch Meadows stone mill and started milling flour, and at the same time found that the grain that came off the ridge tops of the Driftless area was of bread quality more years than not. So we've been working with organic farms on the ridge tops in the Driftless area to produce a quality flour. And we fresh mill, and we've been delivering to Madison. And then recently we were working with Hune Bakery in Evanston. And then there's going to be a new Fennig Bakery coming. And I'm meeting with a partner there, Peter Becker, on Wednesday. So, you know, we're coming to Chicago. And, you know, I just want to talk a little more about grains. Is we've got now what is 70 acres of Turkey Red in the ground. And Turkey Red came from the Crimean region of Russia in the 1870s, went to Kansas and became what is now the great-grandfather of a lot of the hard red winter wheats. And we got a few hundred pounds from Kansas a couple of years back, planted 3 seed trials last year. And, you know, so now we've got seed for 70 acres, and we find that it does Wisconsin winters well, and I have no difficulties with this winter. You know, we're under the snow comfortably here.
You know, that was the question I was going to ask next, because you guys are living in two distinctly different parts of the country. Does that limit the kinds of grains you can grow? So in the Pacific Northwest, are you going to get something that Wisconsin can't do and vice versa?
Well, yes and no. We can grow turkey there, and we do, but the varieties would tend to be pretty regional. Some of the folklore is that you can't grow bread wheat in certain areas, and that's been debunked pretty well. But the varieties would be different, the flavors would be different, and the quality characteristics. But bread wheat can be grown most anywhere.
Yeah, I would like to add to that is the terroir. You know, we do see terroir, and I've been working with, you know, farmers who have been careful with the soil and monitoring what are the micronutrients, and it's the right balance of the micronutrients and a good crop rotation leads to a very healthy soil, and on that, you know, small grains is part of the rotation, and that's what we're buying. And then you get a very flavorful grain, and it's that flavor that makes the customer buy it the second time.
Sure, and the fresh mill too. So that fresh mill, they pick up flavors that they never imagined. So if you can get something that's been milled just a few days ahead of time, or even mill your own, it has a liveliness too when you're baking it. That can be somewhat unpredictable, but that's kind of fun too as a baker.
Yeah. Well, I also want to give a plug for Stone Milling. We've got a 30-inch Meadows mill, and you're grinding the whole grain. You're including the wheat germ, which has the majority of the nutrients in the wheat germ oil, which has got a good chunk of the flavor. And so in the milling process, you need to keep the flavor. And, you know, we do have a sifter, so we can make a whole wheat in a sifted product, but we only sift out about three-quarters of the bran. We do keep what is the wheat germ. So, you know, we don't do white bread, but we'll do a whole wheat or a sifted stone-milled product.
What is white bread, really?
Yucky.
Well, okay, let me pick one. In the about 1900, roller mills and sifters replaced stone milling, where you can essentially take apart the grain, and then you can take out the wheat germ. And so your white bread is with the wheat germ and the bran removed. And it is more shelf stable because there's no oil in it to go rancid. And that was good for larger organizations and larger sales.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And it made the white bread, but you then lack the nutrients in the germ. And so the 12 ways Wonder Bread makes you strong or whatever was the additives that were there in place of the germ.
Uh-huh.
In place of Mother Nature.
They take away all the iron and zinc and magnesium and the good proteins and vitamin B complex. It's basically like taking a wheat seed and peeling it the way you peel an apple.
Yeah,
and throwing that good part away.
Oh,
the flavor and all the nutrients go away. The inside of a wheat kernel is—it looks like a little ball of cotton. It's just this white, fluffy stuff, and that's flour.
I want to get a quick question in here. I'm not sure if you guys would be able to answer it, but let's try it very quickly. John, what's your question for us?
Yeah, I got my new Burpee catalog, and they have in there now. It's called an Amazing Hybrid Sweet Corn, and it's got restricted use. And I'll read it. As by purchasing this package, it's amazing to see the customer agrees to use the seeds solely for home gardening growth for human consumptions and agrees not to distribute, sell the seed or crop or plant for any other purpose. You hear about that lately?
Well, may I comment on that? Did you say hybrid variety?
Correct.
Yeah, well, and that's a corn. You know, a true hybrid will not reproduce, that is, will not grow its own seed, or if it does, it will revert to one of the two parents. You know, or a non-true hybrid would reproduce itself. And what you have is that's the basic language that Monsanto puts in its seed. And it just means you can't replant the seed, but, you know, I kind of think that's an agronomist's joke there, where the hybrid doesn't really need that label because it wouldn't grow anyway.
Right. That's my basic idea on that, too. Because if that'd be the case, just for giggles, I would take an old, the corn on the cob and then take that off in the fall or let it dry out and try to regrow it from there.
We're running into a lot of ownership issues like that. You know, that's the wave coming right now. And for us, in our program, we don't attach those kind of labels to the things that we develop. But it's more and more common. So
I'm going to thank you, John, for that question. So the idea is you guys are growing seeds that will reproduce and that can be passed along to other future generations. Now, before I let you go, talk about the workshop that you're going to be doing at the Good Foods Festival.
Go ahead.
We're on a panel and we'll be talking about good food and how grains, you know, for me, I'm going to be talking about how it's not the wheat or it's not the flour. It's what we've been doing to it, you know, like making white bread and things like that. That's how we've been going south with flavor and functionality and nutrition.
Well, but Stephen,
bread lab. And,
I was just going to say, but Stephen, are we rediscovering part of the title is Ancient Grains. Are we rediscovering stuff that we put aside before and we're growing again?
I'd like to jump in
here.
Yeah, Gilbert.
We'll be talking about the benefits of the older wheats, but and moving forward with them. I think that's important.
Yeah, Gilbert.
Yeah, and what we can offer here is where we are now. I mean, I can show you how we do it. It's not a secret. It's a very old trade. And then, you know, I'd like people into Chicago to be aware of us, because we need Chicago as a market. I'd really like to see the Driftless area of Wisconsin be more of a food shed for Chicago.
Well, and I can see on your website that it's possible to purchase product, everything from chocolate cake mix to some of the wheat flours directly. And,
yes.
And so you would be able to source some of that stuff from your website.
Yes, yes. We're not a totally developed online system, but, you know, you can see what's on the website and you can give us a call.
Well, at the Good Food Festival in Chicago on the 14th, Friday workshop from 10:45 to 12 noon, it's production and processing of local and heritage grains. On Saturday, we lose you, Gilbert, but Stephen's still around. Saturday from 11 to 12:15, Ancient Grains, the Seed to Table Journey. And then there's a second workshop on Saturday from 12:30 to 1:45, Ancient Grains in Your Kitchen. So, gentlemen, I'm looking forward to meeting you in person when you come to Chicago. I appreciate you being on the show, and I'm sure folks are going to be eager to learn all about this.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, you guys have a great Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you too.
Bye-bye. All right, that's just the beginning of what's going on at the Good Food Festival in Chicago. And next week, we are at Colatex. Yay! So I hope you stop by from 9 to 11. We will be broadcasting live and more great guests talk about some of those grains because they have them at Colatex, and I hope you join us there. And meanwhile, we say go green or
go home.
Yay.